Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Good Wednesday morning to you. Got a jam-packed show for you today coming up at the bottom of the hour. Join us in studio. Looking forward to this. Fairhope Mayor Karen Wilson will be with us. Got a very contentious election coming up in Fairhope. We will have Sherry Sullivan, one of her opponents, on tomorrow just to give fair time. Also, United States Senator Doug Jones will be with us. That's at the 10 o'clock hour. We will have his opponent, Tommy Tuberville, on the program tomorrow. And then a couple of guests in the 11 o'clock hour that are very, very interesting. A radio host, friend of mine, been in the business for a while, Baron Coleman, will be with us in the 11 o'clock hour, as well as Yellowhammer News Editor-in-Chief Sean Ross. He will be with us. So big, big show for you today. Are you glad, folks, we can now drop the presumptive from presumptive? Now he is the Democratic, officially the Democratic nominee for President Joe Biden, former vice president, former senator from Delaware. He is Democratic presidential nominee, Joe Biden. Last night's convention, thought it was better. I think it was a lot better than the first night of it. It improved. It's still not quite there yet, and I doubt it gets there. I think the ratings are going to go in the opposite direction. Your first big splash, not really as it just doesn't work. And Republicans are going to have the same difficulties. How do you make this glamorize it? How do you make it exciting? To me, all of the pre-taped elements to this. I'll say this at the very top, when they were going through the role of the states, I thought what they did with Alabama was pretty cool, with the drone footage, and you had the Edmund Pettus Bridge lit up, and you had Terry Sewell standing there at the foot of the Edmund Pettus Bridge. That was a cool view, and that was a cool way to do the very top of it. The rest of it was just, it was cheesy. Is that fair? It just seemed like it was overproduced, trying too hard, all contrived. It kind of made me feel, I don't know, maybe if I was on that team, and I'm not a Democrat, I'd feel better about it. But you sit there, and it got away from the PBS telethon-ish thing, but it still felt a little after-school special. Here's the problem Democrats face. They got to make the country out to be bad, a disaster under Donald Trump, but then they dwell in the pessimist too much. They dwell in the negative too much. So where do you find that right balance? Where do you find the balance that there's a brighter tomorrow without making it sound like you think the country's terrible, that America sucks or whatever? And that's a difficult thing to pull off. Because they're not attacking Trump for a particular ideology. He's not ideological. He's not right-wing conservative, which would be the normal playbook. Whereas Republicans, when they have their convention, they'll be able to play that card. They'll be able to say socialism, communism, Soviet Union, and all of the evils of the Cold War. They'll be able to point to something that is rooted in this belief system that most Americans reject. Some don't. We're coming around to socialism, apparently. But I think most of the country looks at socialism as something kind of like an ideology that doesn't work. It's been tried. It's failed. Where Democrats' problem is, well, it's not right-wing pushing granny off the cliff anymore. It's just incompetence. It's all the bad things going on in your life, and it's all Donald Trump's fault. You can make that case. How many people are going to believe that it's all Donald Trump's fault? How many people's going to just have that takeaway that you think the country's bad, that America is bad? That's always been a problem for Democrats. I mean, you get somebody like a John Kerry up there, and it's that to a lot of people is just, it's anti-patriotic. It's it's a lot of bad stuff that we think about. You know, we want to be proud of our country. Even in the darkest times during a pandemic, we want to be proud. We want to be, you know, we want to be proud of the American flag. Didn't quite get that sense from the Democrats. So that is a problem Democrats face. Can they save these, salvage these last nights here? We'll have to wait and see. But I'm it's not really working for me. Like I said, I'm not on that team. But just looking at it, it does. It's, their convention's not striking the fear in the hearts of Republicans, for sure. Let's take a quick phone call here. Let's hear from Wendell in Daphne. We'll talk about socialism. Wendell, what's on your mind?
Hey, I just was listening to what you were saying about how some people are catering to the socialism ideal. And if you'll notice that the people that pay the bills, nobody that pays the bills are all that enthused about socialism. What do you think about that?
What do I think about socialism? I am not a I'm not a fan of socialism. I don't think it works. You got to have some skin in the game in your society for it to work, because then it becomes Atlas Shrugged at some point, right? Where people just give up and they all go. The people that work go do their own thing and leave the other people behind.
I appreciate that. And that was, when I said the people that pay the bills, that was the exact point I was trying to make. The people with skin in the game are in no way enthused about any sort of socialist system whatsoever. The people without skin in the game are the ones that are pushing that.
Right. Well, and then that's, you know, they are using that to achieve power. I don't think it's necessary. I think it's under the guise of quote-unquote fairness, but I do think it is just a means to win an election.
Absolutely.
Thanks for the call, Wendell. Yeah, so the socialism ideal, it works to this extent that there are people that are having a rough go at it, work hard, don't seem to be getting ahead, and here comes Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or somebody like that playing the class warfare card. And now I think the Bernie Sanders and AOCs really believe this stuff. It's where we get to the Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and those types, that they're just using it to win an election. They're just using it to achieve power, to gain authority over your life. Because there's a lot of perks to having that. And then it's very, you know, I don't know, addictive is the word, but I think that is where this comes from. That there's true ideologues out there that look at they'll design this system on a piece of paper and they think it would work, particularly in academia. But it doesn't work because human nature is a fickle beast, right? It doesn't conform to your nice little plan that you thought out to govern society. You got to give people incentives. You got to recognize that there is just human nature involved. And so that's why I would like reject socialism as an ideology. But the biggest reason why you reject socialism in our politics today is because it's just being used as a wedge, as a something to say we're going to make everything equal and fair. And we know we can never achieve that. We know that you can never achieve absolute equality. You can strive for it. But I think equality of opportunity is a better way. When we're talking about economic systems, we're talking about other tenets of government, that's a different discussion. But socialism itself, you can't just give everybody equal. It doesn't work. There'll always be, it's like when you look at like what's going on in some of these socialist nations, these communist nations that still are on the planet, they have thriving black markets. And where does that come from? That comes from the individuals there. They're just responding to markets. And you can't take that out of just society. There's no underground, there's no black socialist movement, you know, like underground in the basement. But you are always going to have people that will find a way to get what they want or try to get what they want. It's people that will look for ways to capitalize on it. So, it, you know, to me, that is what Republicans are going to hammer, and that is going, maybe it's effective, but to the simple person that looks at, you know, well, there's billionaires, that's not fair. I had to go to work 40 hours a week, and I got a family to feed, while this guy over here, he's making billions doing nothing. And you don't really understand American capitalism if you think that way. It's difficult to understand markets and capital and risk and how that makes a lot of things possible in our economy. But you're never going to get that discussion. We're never going to have that discussion. We're just going to talk about fairness and economic justice or whatever the buzzword is of the day. But that's the problem the Democrats face. They're essentially running against America's status quo, which there's a lot of problems in this country. But how far do they go without coming off as anti-American? That we need to be more like the Europeans. Who wants to be more like France? Luxembourg, yeah, you know, like who wants to head in that direction? There are some people, but I would tell you that I don't think it's by far. There's not a majority of people that want like that system of governance. But where Democrats have, you know, the Republicans have the ideology, and the Democrats have to just run against the status quo, and that's the conundrum they're in with Donald Trump, because he doesn't adhere to a particular ideology, so they have to just make stuff up. And here we are, we're talking about the Postal Service. And during Sean Sullivan's show, we were just talking about the Postal Service. Where does this come from? And it's always a product of presidencies and power. They always have to play defense on certain things. Some resonate more than others. I think some are more important than others. But there's always going to be that one big thing, you know. Valerie Plame during the Bush years. IRS or Fast and Furious during the Obama years. Benghazi. You have Hillary Clinton come sit before the House Oversight Committee with Trey Gowdy or a special select committee for 12 hours. And it you get to election day, doesn't matter as much. Postal Service thing is a little different. It just seems to me, and I don't know where this really comes from, but here it sprung on us on the last minute. It seems like a desperate Hail Mary. But if you look at the polls and you listen to the people on the news, they would tell you that, you know, this is a foregone conclusion. Joe Biden's the next president of the United States. It's not even close. Trump's going to lose big. It's going to be a landslide election. But why are we kind of trying to make this issue of the Postal Service, calling members back from an August recess to Washington, D.C., to Capitol Hill? Why are we trying to make this the thing if the Biden's got it? Now, I've said the selection of Kamala Harris as his running mate, as Joe Biden's running mate, was to me, seemed like they're playing the safe play, that it's to prevent defense. But the other side of that, maybe this is a product of the House of Representatives and Nancy Pelosi's messaging machine saying we need to make the post office the thing. Because where has this been? If indeed the Postal Service is a problem, Nancy Pelosi has been in charge of the House of Representatives since the early part of 2019, has not talked about this issue at all, and all of a sudden, 3 months before election, here it is, the most important thing that we can think of. That's your tell right there, that this isn't that big of a deal, or at least at face value, it seems like a big deal. And you've got the pictures of the mailboxes behind a storage shed at the Postal Service somewhere, I don't know. And you have the Trump's trying to roll back the Postal Service because somehow that's going to keep a fair and honest election from happening. Mount Chihau is my Everest. They had the opportunity to fix this. 8 years of Obama, Congress off and on. They haven't done it yet. No one's asking that question if it's really a problem. Got to take a timeout. We will return. This is the Jeff Borsch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Land of light. We tell stories about what goes on in Montgomery at midnight. Cause Music Row ain't only in Tennessee. So won't you bury me in Dixie? And welcome back to the Jeff Borsch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Still to come in the next segment. Looking forward to having Fairhope Mayor Karen Wilson in studio. She'll join us. Going to talk about her election. What's going on in Fairhope? What's kind of the trend there in the community? Try to get more a local flavor here. Something I didn't do really well in my stint in Huntsville. Improve upon that and at least try to get some of these local, make it a little more hyper-local if possible. So that's coming up in the next segment. Make sure you stay tuned for that. Yesterday, Sean Sullivan had State Senator Arthur Orr on the program. He is the chairman of the Education Trust Fund in the State Senate. I would say he is probably at the forefront of this big push to get some kind of liability, immunity, or protection passed through the legislature. The problem is we're so far out from the 2021 session right now. We're looking at February. It's August 19th, and we're talking about stuff in February. Maybe it's time for the governor to call a special session. Well, there's problems here. The governor is very reluctant to do so. And well, I think members of the Senate would like to see a special session. I'm not so sure people in the House, particularly the leadership, want to see a special session at all. Mike McCutcheon doesn't want to do it. And granted, McCutcheon has a bigger chamber, more members. It's tougher. It's more difficult to do social distancing in the House chamber. They could figure out a way. There are ways to do it. They did it when they did the budgets at the end of April. They could figure that out. But that's the hang-up. So there's members of the Senate. We have Senator Chris Elliott on as well, saying that he thinks it needs to be done, and there's a list of stuff that hasn't been accomplished that's waiting in the hopper to get done. Primarily, I mentioned liability immunity, but there's also some economic development packages that need to be extended. If they run out, the problem is you can't compete for certain industries or businesses locating in Alabama. And you talk to these economic development people, the Chamber of Commerce types, and that's their conundrum. Can they negotiate a deal with something that doesn't exist anymore under contingency that it's going to be passed by the legislature in February? Can they legally do that? That's the question. And I don't think they can. I mean, there's all these rules that govern that area. Yet, we're just going to let it expire and we'll figure it out later, right? Or we'll do it through some kind of executive order, perhaps. But that's exactly the problem. That the word on the street, if you talk to people in Montgomery, governor doesn't want a special session, not because she's, you know, really scared about COVID spreading in the chamber of legislature, although it did in Mississippi. Well, we had to change the flag right away, the Mississippi flag, and they had to do that. They had COVID-19 problems for that. However, there seems to be this fear on the executive branch. The legislature is going to come in and start stripping away some of the governor's power, some of the state health officers' power. You won't have a shutdown without some kind of legislative oversight. It's going to make things more difficult. It's going to make things more cumbersome. Therefore, let's put this off as long as we can. If you recall back in the in this general session this year, the governor didn't want the legislature to come back to pass the budgets. They said, well, we could do it later. Budgets have been passed before. They've been passed beyond the general session before. Let's do that this time. Why? Let's be safer than sorry. Or let's be safe, better safe than sorry, right? That's the thinking there. So whether that is I wouldn't be very bullish on a special session happening this year for that reason. But it could happen. I mean, it's feasible for it to happen. They could figure out a way to do it. But it still comes down to the governor not wanting to do it. And as Arthur Orr was saying yesterday, the Senator Orr was explaining, well, they could come to an agreement. You could get Del Marsh, the pro tem. You get Speaker McCutcheon to come in and say, we're not going to go beyond your set agenda, Governor. We will agree to stay within the confines of your agenda, and we could do a special session, take care of these big ticket items, particularly prisons, DOJ breathing down our neck. Also, could come and do something about, like I said, the economic incentive package, the liability issues dealing with COVID-19. The Senate wants to do it. I got to tell you, I don't think the House wants to do it at all. that's the hang up. Speaker McCutcheon not really into this idea. He admitted as much on Alabama Public Television on Friday night. And he's looking at he says the health of his body. He's looking at the health of his members, his caucus. And until you could convince, I think, the leadership in the House, the governor and the leadership of the House kind of doing their own thing, and the Senate's doing their own thing, and that's a product of what happened at the end of the last session, that the Alabama Senate and the House got a little sideways. The governor leaked something to the media about the, I think, Del Marsh or somebody in the Senate had proposed building a new state house with CARES Act money, coronavirus relief money. How dare you? There's people suffering out there without jobs, and you want to build a new Taj Mahal state house. And that was the insinuation, right? And it embarrassed the Senate. The Senate didn't really say that. They just kind of threw a list out there at the request of the governor's office. And the governor's office used it against them. And there are still hard feelings about that. We don't, I mean, obviously it's not that important to our daily lives. But I think that these divisions within the legislature in Montgomery are why you won't see a special session. They probably won't be able to come to that agreement anytime soon. Got to take a quick timeout. We will return. This is the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T. Open up a big old can. Good times, unwind, falling out of love in the same night.
And welcome back to the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Wednesday to you. Halfway through the week. Still haven't been fired yet. It's very, very, very promising, I think, here at FM Talk 106.5. Still to come on the program today, United States Senator Doug Jones joins us in the next hour. And in the 11 o'clock hour, we have Baron Coleman, a radio host at Auburn, Montgomery, for years and years and years. We'll talk to him about some things going on in politics. And my friend from Yellowhammer News, Sean Ross, editor-in-chief. So make sure that you stay tuned for that. I'd like to welcome my next guest. We're excited to have her in. She is your mayor, for those of you at Fairhope. So glad she could join us in studio today. Mayor Karen Wilson joins us today. Mayor, how are you this morning?
Wonderful, and I appreciate you inviting me on the show, Jeff. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate you coming in, making the trek across the bay. That is that's very good of you to do so. let's get right into it. First of all, let's talk about Fairhope and COVID-19, dealing with that. People, I spent a little time at Fairhope. It seems like people are kind of adjusting to the guidance of COVID-19. Is that your assessment?
Absolutely. I mean, I can speak both as the mayor and a business owner, that people are absolutely taking it more seriously. And I have been working with the state to really get the local numbers on a zip code level, because we still are only getting the county. And of course, we're the largest county. So the state is working on a platform where local leaders can log in for zip codes over 25,000 in population, which 36532 is, and then they can share that information daily. Now, we really need better than that. And I update what I'm able to get once every couple weeks on my Facebook, but it's
making that assessment, because you got, when you get the county numbers, you got the beaches, and then right. You got all the cities in central Baldwin County, and then everything is kind of, it's very tribal in some ways, but knowing what's working and what's not, I guess it's difficult to get a good feel for that.
It really is. I mean, I think the number of positive tests is going down, which is very, very good news. And based on the statistics I just posted on my Facebook, it's through maybe the first week in August, it's very... it's promising for sure, but school. This is before school went back and some other factors. But you know, we're doing a lot better. I think the face masks are absolutely working, and of course, we've been doing this in the city internally for a long time.
And you have somewhat of a tourist economy, I would say. People come to see Fairhope. Have you felt, or have the businesses there felt really any impact from that?
It's everyone's suffering right now. Our small businesses, who really rely on that tourism during the summertime. I mean, you know, during the year it's kind of icing on the cake, but in the summertime that's it's like a Christmas, you know. So this is, our small businesses are suffering greatly, and I'm wanting to do a COVID website, which is basically just a directory of all businesses in Fairhope. It doesn't matter, you know, if you have a membership at different, you know, chambers or organizations. This is a free database where they can update all of their local information, and it can be searched by a category or business, and so you can have real-time information about, you know, what's going on in their business during this time.
Is it, a lot of places feel like we're turning a corner, though, that the trend is in a good direction. Is that same?
I think we are, you know, turning a corner, but something like this, which is reimbursable by the COVID funds, it can turn into an opportunity to, you know, for visitors in the future. So, you know, it'll serve several different purposes.
Right. So, well, at least we seem to be getting our sea legs under this problem and figuring out how to adapt to it. And in every location across the state's got a different set of circumstances they got to deal with. But it sounds, for the most part, people are figuring that out.
Yes, I think so too. And I still am always, you know, pretty conservative when it comes to getting relaxed. We're still doing, like I said, a lot internally, and just making sure that we continue to stay the course and keep these numbers low. Because Thomas Hospital, who I'm in contact with a lot, part of infirmary, you know, they give us a lot of good data that we can make our local decisions from, and they are doing well, but because they have to test before elective surgeries and things like that, their numbers are still very high, but they're asymptomatic too.
Right.
So
let's talk about other things. Fairhope,
okay.
Where we are right now, August 19, 2020, your tenure as mayor, how the direction that under your leadership of the city, is it, do you feel like you're in a good place? Just give us your thoughts on things right now.
Well, in 2016, when I was actively searching for somebody to run for mayor,
right,
I knew that, you know, we were not in a good place just because of comprehensive planning as a small business owner. And I think the same selfish reasons that I would want to succeed as a small business and have opportunity for my kids is in line with why people move and stay in Fairhope. And that growth was changing and is changing who we are. So I think comprehensive planning was the biggest thing that I wanted to tackle, and that we did. We have a comprehensive land use plan secured, and it starts, the citizen engagement part starts this fall. And it can be either, you know, kind of like the last comp plan where there was the optics of input and things were put together, or it can be a genuine process, which we have a two-year timeline to really get out and talk to every community to see what their vision is. We're bringing in city planners, placemakers, planners and engineers, so we tie in our environmental sensitivities, all of our utilities, and just identifying the high growth patterns. Because if we don't have an adopted vision for each area, then there's just no way to hold people accountable. And that's what this process is going to be. It's 3 years in the making, and I'm very excited to start that process.
It's really getting, figuring out the growing pains and trying to get ahead of it. Because Walla County is growing.
Absolutely.
Fastest growing place in the state.
Yes.
But it just seems like you run the risk if you don't really come up with a strategic plan or something, that you're going to have, you know, the things we always talk about when places grow, like traffic, and you mentioned the environmental aspects, and you want to make sure, you know, I would assume that the people there that have been there, they're taken care of.
Absolutely. You know, we're all there. There's nobody stuck in Fairhope, okay? I mean, we're there because we want to be there. And you can increase population even significantly and still have that sense of community and uniqueness. We have an unbelievable entrepreneurial ecosystem that needs to be protected. We also, you know, I had the opportunity to go to the Mayor Institute for City Design last year, and it was five other mayors in the country that, you know, all experiencing significant growth and all abutting a body of water. So we all had some similar challenges. And I will tell you that Fairhope was, you know, about half the size of the next large, you know, small city, you
right.
know. So I do know that this is something that we can accomplish. Growth and population growth is doesn't have to change us, but it does take, you know, a unique plan to do that. And I think the way we're going to go about it is going to be also very unique. It's a two-year process, and I ask for a lot of money to get it accomplished, and these are funds that are not going to have to be paid back by citizens.
So, and you know, do you, because that does seem to be the big point of contention, that there are people that want to grow, expand a tax base.
Right.
But then there's, let's tap the brakes here and think this out. That seems to be where there's a lot of division there.
When I took office, I said, we've got to know where our utilities are. And this is when really nobody was talking about utilities. I knew that, you know, we were using the utility profits kind of as a slush fund. And that's when I discovered that the city that had been financially reporting, you know, that we're in the black and doing great, was actually running an annual $6 million deficit. And without those utility profits, which it was over 50% of utility profits annually being used to break even on government expenses, that's why our utilities were not being invested in. And so all of that was straightened out. We financially separated both. One's an enterprise account and one's, you know, a government account. And so, you know, all of the, you know, we own our electric, gas, water, and sewer. So that's unique to a small town as well. And all of these infrastructure upgrades will be completed by 2022, which is amazing. So it's a really huge turnaround. And then the city, since it's self-sufficient now financially, and we've paid off long-term debt, invested in employees and new equipment and all of this, you know, we are going to see in about 2 years a significant surplus that we can reinvest into community development and community projects that really we've only been talking about for decades.
So these infrastructure upgrades, I mean, that's always every city, every mayor is
Absolutely.
Always trying to figure out that dilemma,
it's
right?
It's easy to talk about, that for sure. And I will tell you that infrastructure is almost unaffordable. And that's why, you know, when I couldn't get council support the first 2 years to really take this seriously, I went around them and got secured $11 million, $18 million total in restore funds, but most of which will be invested in our rehabilitating our sewer lines and upgrading our lift stations. That's, again, money that the citizens don't have to pay for, and really rate increases that they will not see in the future.
So, and you know, but that's always, you run into these problems, the planning with that, and I mean, it's a lot more complicated than I guess people think. There's a lot of right-of-way issues and mm-hmm. the environmental issues and all of that. Talk about dealing with some of those problems.
Well, you know, as the rainiest city in the country, as a suburb of Mobile, you know, we also have stormwater challenges. And when we dig once now. That really wasn't happening in a collaborative way. So when we are upgrading our sewer lines, we're, you know, installing conduit for future fiber. We are making sure that we're taking care of stormwater issues as we dig, and also, you know, redoing sidewalks and making sure that when we repave these streets that they are complete streets. The city of Fairhope was the first city to adopt complete streets as a result of a ride that I started over 10 years ago. It's called the Good Life Ride from Fairhope to Gulf Shores, and it was to promote pedestrian safety, streets for all users, particularly cycling. So, you know, those are all the things we take into account every time we replace something.
And then, so it's more forward-looking than maybe we would think of at face value.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, the conduit for fiber, you know, having fiber as a utility to make it affordable and accessible is, you know, supporting the ecosystem we already have, the entrepreneurial ecosystem we already have, but that is our future. Citizens, you know, the future development are smart houses. We have an average of 30, you know, things that we use for Wi-Fi in our house, you know, and those are things that you're going to need.
It's upgrading that broadband infrastructure.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, talking to mayors all over the state, that's a big selling point for them to have that
yes.
gig internet and you could do the smart houses for the utility.
Absolutely.
Particularly if the city is involved in the utility, then
absolutely.
It becomes
you
becomes
can check
in their interest,
live,
right?
You know what your electric bill is going to be and how you can save money. It's putting that smart grid in, and you know we have a lot of reasons why the city would invest in something like that, and it's a benefit for those who live inside our city limits. And if we partner with a company, which is how I picture this happening, if we go outside the city limits for that utility or fiber, then they would pay a little bit of a premium like they do for our utilities.
It's just upgrading quality of life.
And, absolutely.
And that in the long run turns out to be a draw, I would think. I mean, like, where do you see as an acceptable rate of growth for Fairhope?
Well, I mean, that growth rate, nobody could ever manage, you know, but acceptable is making sure that we absolutely keep up with services and in a very proactive mode when we've been in a very reactionary mode for decades. And with 44.3% growth from 2010 to 2018, we only hired 3% full-time
to keep
employees
up with it.
You know, so we were
so people in other cities would kill for that rate of growth.
Absolutely.
You know,
and that's the thing, is you know there are benefits to that, but it's a huge negative if it's haphazard planning,
and you watch some other places that maybe weren't really braced for it. I guess the idea is you gotta get ahead of the ball there.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. And we are, you know, that's where we are today from 2016 to today, is that each department, although we absolutely have improvements still to do, we've got to get, you know, we're in a proactive mode right now, and we absolutely can't go backwards, because the, you know, what I will say is that the city has always had a full-time city administrator. I tried to get a manager form of government in because we need a professional running the city. I am qualified for that because I have a finance and business background, but anybody can run for mayor, you know, and not having that city administrator, and while it saved the city about $400,000, I'm working as the full-time city administrator and the full-time mayor. We can't, with that financial component, you know, we can't lose that fiscal health.
Well, we'll take a quick commercial break
here.
When we get back, we'll talk about the election and some of the things going on there. This is the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Perhaps I may become a highway.
Folks said that I would change my mind. I'd straighten up and do just fine. Ah, but I still love rock and roll.
And welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Happy Wednesday morning to you. Still studio with us, Mayor Fairhope Karen Wilson, running for re-election coming up real soon. Mayor, we talked during the break about the you have the city of Fairhope's 14.5 square miles.
Right.
But you have this humongous planning jurisdiction you're
that
looking at.
That is correct.
73 square miles. That's quite the jump up there, and that's something you got to figure out how to deal with when we're talking about growth.
Yes. I mean, as soon as I took office, I explained this is the threat. We have 14.5 square miles of municipal limits and a 73-mile planning jurisdiction that is mostly unzoned. And with that, a lot of developers have been able to kind of piggyback on our quality of life. And because there weren't, you know, certain codes upheld for everyone, where we came from, and there's been a lot of talk about getting along this, you know, which is kind of funny to me, but you know, there's a difference between going along and getting along, you know, and these are the types of things that we had to change. You know, citizens are no longer paying for developers' share of their infrastructure. That's one of the reasons why we were, you know, hemorrhaging.
We don't need necessarily need an economic incentive to get people to come to Fairhope. They
already want to come
to Fairhope, is what you're
and,
saying.
And, you know, this is, if they abide by our standards, we all win. They'll get more for their property. The sellers who are selling the property, I mean, we all win. You know, but that is significant. Like I said, that citizens were paying for developer share of utility infrastructure, and now they're not. All developers are, you know, upheld to a sewer code. It's not a sewer code that I put in. It was in a long time before I took office, but you know, that prevented you know, developers from putting in grinder pumps for, you know, the consumer to replace, you know, 5 years later. And all of that stopped. And with that, there was a lot of people that there's a lot of people lost out, let's just say, and they're not profiting now off of the backs of our taxpayers. So, you know, there has been for 4 years this swell of, you know, trying to really get back in office and get that control back, because there's a lot of profit there and it's at our expense. We don't want that. And, you know, I would hate for this, you know, 4 years to just go back to the same political way of doing business.
And real quick, we got just a couple of minutes here. You got an election coming up, a crowded field. Four of you are running for mayor. How do you feel? How do you feel about heading into election day? Talk about that.
Well, I mean, I feel confident. You know, we have a really smart voter base, and I think that the results speak for themselves. There's a lot of distractions going on, like any election right before the vote, and I think that people just need to get the facts. This is what we've accomplished. I want one more term, get back to my life. You know. Stepping up for a cause and not a career, so we can finish what we've started and get the city and utilities where a place where they cannot be reversed and go back to, you know, using profits as a slush fund by getting a utility board and getting a manager form of government. That's the way we can consistently grow with professional experience, keeping, you know, our citizens first and foremost. You know, being a champion for citizens has been what this has been about. Any conflict was me standing up for citizens, and it's been evident with every decision that I've made, from trying to not get politicians free free family insurance to having our assets given away to third parties.
All right, well, thank you for coming
in.
We got to head to break here.
That's
Fairhope Mayor Karen Wilson joining us in studio. We will be right back. This is the Jeff Poole Show at FM Talk 106.5.